We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 299 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton. He's Emil Evanescian. I know you're dealing with Dan and Emil in the post-El Clasico hangover, but I do have a surprise, and I think for longtime listeners, you know exactly what that surprise is at the end of this show. And even if you read the show notes, then you know what the surprise is. But either way, you will hear from him or her later on in the show. But for now, Emil and I are going to do our best to break down what I think, Emil, is a very difficult El Clasico to break down. Because you and I were just talking before we turned on things. Mm-hmm. And as much as I want to like see this as one individual result, and it's actually against my nature, the Kool-Aid, where you feel like it's just one match. I say it out loud and go, okay, the 3 points against Valencia, they matter just as much as 0 points against Real Madrid. It's on to the next one. Rayo Vallecano, Alaves, those games actually are more important about Barca moving up the table than even Real Madrid, because top four is the objective, not winning La Liga this season, right? The objective is just to get top four. And so Valencia, Alaves, and Rayo matter so much more to that. But as much as I say that, Emil, I immediately, you know, the hypocrisy comes in and I go, wait a second. I lost in El Clasico to Real Madrid 2-1. That is an entire referendum of FC Barcelona from 1899 until now. And we need to just understand it's a referendum. And the hypocrisy in my heart does not match what my brain feels.
I think what really stinks about it is, you know, I was reading it's the first four Clásico losing streak for Barca in, I believe it's 56 years. And Koeman is the first coach in, 85, 86 years to
Patrick O'Connell
lose three in a row. Yeah.
And prior to the Civil War. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think part of the problem is that it's starting to feel like a while since we experienced a Clásico win and even just like a really kind of uplifting and joyful Clásico win. Those are kind of fading into the rear view a little bit. And so, yeah, because I agree with you. In a vacuum, this game, and we've talked about it before here, we've talked about it offline. The objective this year, as much as idealistically you might want it to be competing for the league or winning the league, I don't think it is that this year. This year, it's accumulate as many points as you can, beat the opponents that you can beat, and even the occasions where, you know, you take a point, just accumulate as many points as you can, get into the top four, lick your wounds, and come back to battle next year. So in that sense, in a vacuum, in my rational brain, this doesn't matter anymore, like you said, than Rayo or Valencia or Elche or name the teams. But at the same time, you want to win, and I think the thing is too, you want to take your chances. If you play a great game against Madrid and you strike a couple of times, but whatever happens, whether it's Benzema or Vinicius or, you know, Alaba or whomever, but if their talent or their spark and their brilliance kind of overwhelms you on a day, I feel like you can deal with that more than
Bayern Munich.
Yeah, then we had chances and we whiffed on chances, or, you know, the what if or the what could have been hurts a little bit more than we gave them our best punch and on the day they were just better than us.
Yeah, I'm caught between two minds about that, like trying to figure that in my brain, where I remember back to last year, was it Cadiz, I think it was, where Lenglet makes the error It's all on Lenglet, and Barcelona, you know, you could say that Barca could have also created more chances and finished more chances. And it doesn't come down to one mistake or one moment in the game, but in that case it did. And Barca dropped points because of one individual mistake by Lenglet. And browsing over this game, we'll talk about the huge miss by Dest, of course, in the first half that, you know, I want to actually have a little segment on that in total, because it is such the most important moment of the game. Yeah. But there was the Dest miss. But overall, even his performance, he was fine. I mean, I go up and down the squad for both squads. And it was like, I think it's that sinking feeling that it wasn't an individual mistake that you could just like put in the past. It was that individuals were fine, but Barca as a team were the problem. Mm. And I think the feeling I had before the game that still sticks with me after the game is that I hope that Barca wouldn't get let in an early goal, because I felt like an early goal, especially from the likes of Benzema, it was going to be a death sentence. That was it for Barca. And they hung on.
Yeah, but there's a snowball effect to those. Yeah,
exactly. And I thought the starting lineup was good. I thought the not only the choices, but even the formation, I thought they came out with the right fight, the desire. The Camp Nou had 35,000 people. So, I mean, we were ready to go. It was El Clasico. It kind of felt like El Clasico in it. But in me, I said, Barca are not as good as Real Madrid. And there's a sense among culés that Barca have to be the better team to win a matchup like this. And not only do they have to be the better team to win, but they have to be much better than Real Madrid to get any kind of result. And Barca just don't play, even at home, they don't play as a scrappy underdogs. They don't play as this unified, united front. And I think coming out of the match, that's unfortunate, because that's how I feel. I mean, it was just confirmation bias. That feeling I had is what makes it worse, is that I can live with mistakes from young players, from Dest and Eric Garcia, who were both, again, we'll talk about it, hot and cold, and individual players that are learning, Ansu figuring out how to get back to health and make himself useful again. Gabi, a huge experience for him in his first El Clasico. And I can live with mistakes from young players, but the team as a whole, veterans and young players alike, just feels off. It feels disjointed. It feels like they can't be underdogs, and they are just the second best team in El Clasico, even though they were the better team. Like, the result at the end doesn't match even the match we saw, because it's always Real Madrid on the counterattack. Real Madrid are willing to be the worst team, and they still got the 3 points. And that kills me, because like that first goal goes in and I go, man, we're going to watch Vinny Jr. on the ground for the next 65 minutes. And then he's going to sub out and somebody else is going to be on the ground. And it was Courtois. I didn't have that on the Real Madrid bingo.
Yeah, he wasn't on the bingo card. Yeah.
Injury, but we carry on with that. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, I think for all the star-centric kind of Madrid, the Florentino Perez thing, Madrid scrap better than Barca do. And Madrid are more willing. It's not that they want to, but they seem either more willing or more capable of playing ugly than Barca are. And I mean, I think, you know, you touch on the Dest miss, and, you know, subsequently, even after the goal, the PK header that, I mean, it wasn't on target. Like, it's not like it was just wide, but it was so gutting to see it kind of, you think it's going in, and then it just kind of flies by. Yeah. And when Barca didn't have an immediate answer, or just even kind of an immediate onslaught of attack where you feel like you're pinning the opponent back and retaliating, it increasingly became, and, you know, particularly after halftime, it was clear that Madrid were more than happy to relinquish possession and just absorb whatever pressure Barca could conjure, and just try to clip a second one. And even if they didn't, they still had the lead. So it was, if we can keep you out of our goal, then we've done our job. And they didn't really care how they got there. They weren't trying to outplay Barca. They got their goal. I mean, it was kind of the classic. It struck me as a little bit of the way Jose Mourinho would talk about away games in the Champions League, in knockout ties in the Champions League, is you get your goal, or you try to get a goal, and then you just hunker down. And we're not trying to be heroes here. We're not trying to run up the score. We're here for a result. We're here to do a professional job.
Well, yeah, and on the first goal, I mean, there's blame to be thrown all around on everybody, where Memphis losing the ball in the position he did. Yeah. You can't take that touch on the outside of your boot, because there could be a defender on rushing, and then it's Alaba who takes possession. And then Memphis doesn't track him. He does not hand him off. And so you cannot leave your man if you're not going to hand him off. And then Mingueza, because he missed the tackle on Vinny Jr., there's space is left in way behind. And then Garcia, as he's entering his zone, if you will, doesn't track Alaba. either. And so that first goal winds up being a huge team mistake. And I'm not sure what Ter Stegen could have done. It does go across his goal as well, but it was perfectly placed. A well done shot by Alaba. It's indicative. That goal is indicative of Real Madrid. And I think, not to say to credit to Real Madrid, but Barcelona in this match in the midfield between De Jong, who didn't have a particularly good game, and then Busquets and Gabi, Barcelona's midfield were actually, to me, quicker or had a little more liveliness than the Madrid midfield, where Cruz and Modric were almost nowhere to be found. Modric a little bit in that second half, but I mean, Cruz was, I mean, he was one of the worst players on the field to me, or at least non-existent, you know, not doing much of anything. And
yeah, he was just more anonymous, I think.
And Gabi was largely, you know, defending him well and keeping him in check. And same thing with Casemiro, he wasn't really affecting the game much other than, you know, snuffing out a little bit of danger. But really, that was all on Alaba. I mean, Alaba had a really good game. But that said, because of how slow their midfield is, right, that's one of the excuses for Barca. Like, Pique's slow, Busquets is slow, Barca's slow up the middle. And Barca also, you know, we have this idea that they don't have much speed, because they don't. Dembele is quite quick, but Gabi is not necessarily a fast player. And there's a difference between fast and athleticism, right? Like, athleticism is, or the strength or whatever adage you want to use about.
And there's, you know, like, dexterity and agility and things like that.
Whatever we call Bayern Munich, right? Because Bayern Munich is like, they're better athletes, therefore that's where football is. And I'm not going to get into those tropes. But what Madrid is they're kind of slow in the same way that Barca is kind of slow. But the speed that they do have, where Barcelona don't really have a Vinny Jr. I mean, Ansu is getting back to fitness, but even he is like, you know, he's not necessarily a Ferrari. He's just a very, very fast car, right? Like,
he's not a burner. Exactly.
He is quick. He's fast. Yes. He's strong. Yeah. He's all those things. He's a great all around athlete. But Vinny Jr. is just fast. I mean, that's what that kid does. I mean, that's what he is. And they know how to use his speed. So Benzema doesn't even have to be fast. He just kind of, Benzema is actually statistically, both on who scored and then the other one I went to, I'm forgetting the website. He actually was the worst grade wise. He got like a 6.18, like, which is worse than everybody on the field. And so Benzema, I know the eye test tells you that he was effective, right? Like, the advanced metrics say he wasn't. And that's actually the other thing, looking at the advanced metrics and all that stuff. So it's just like the players that I didn't think were great, like Alba, to me, I was like, where was he? I mean, I thought that Balde might have done a similar job with, he just felt anonymous to me. He felt also like he was still dealing with that ankle injury. It looked like he wasn't completely fit. And that was why, and the reason I asked that is because of the Vinny Jr. thing. While Alba, he had to defend a little bit. I mean, not really. I mean, but Barca weren't, whatever speed they had with Dest and Alba and Ansu, there's no real plan that you can see to let those guys go out and be runners. Even De Jong, who's not really fast, but he can dribble, there really wasn't even those spaces for him to run into. And you know that Real Madrid had prepared for that. So I guess the point is that first goal was a reminder that Real Madrid, they're willing to counterattack, they're willing to muddy the game up, and they're not better athletes. They're not faster. They just know how to use the weapons and the tools that they have. And that, Emil, is a final reminder that Real Madrid, when they cut ties with Cristiano Ronaldo now almost 2 years ago, and now they cut ties with Sergio Ramos in the offseason, their rebuilding process has kind of been on the fly, but it also is already at a different stage than Barca's is. And they are farther along of this championship rebuild than Barca is. And that kind of goal reminds me of that fact that they better know how to use the weapons they have, even though Barca were the better team. But Barca aren't a better team because they're a worse team, right? But no, they have a squad that is more talented, in my opinion.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
In a sense, kind of, Barca have the same remnants of the spine of the last decade, kind of in a similar way to what Madrid do, in the sense that, you know, Alba's still there, Piqué is still there, Busquets is still there. And similarly, you know, Toni Kroos is still there, and Modric and Benzema. I mean, I think one of the things is, at this stage in the game, Benzema is the best individual player of those six, of the kind of those legacy superstars. Yeah. I think with Madrid, I think the loss of Ronaldo sort of wasn't seismic in the same way that the Messi loss was. And even, you know, I mean, Barca over the last 4 years have lost Messi, Suarez, and Neymar. And
Griezmann.
And Griezmann.
We had to throw him in. He was a second.
No, it's true. I mean, he's,
yeah, have to.
Yeah. I mean, he scored two Champions League goals this past week. And so I think but with Madrid, they lost Cristiano, but they kept Benzema, who is still, you know, a world-class player. But along the way, they brought in the likes of, whether it was Vinicius, and they made adjustments along the margins that have taken, I think, in a better way than Barca's have. And so I think they started their rebuild potentially even earlier than Barca did. And, you know, even the guys that didn't work were kind of moved out quickly, and there don't seem to be a lot of lingering issues, but they seem to have figured out who is going to be a part of this squad. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of question marks. There's no will he, won't he types of players. And so they have the talents that they want, and they have them playing the way that they intend to play.
Yeah, and they kept showing the bench for Barcelona with Araujo, or injured players rather, with Araujo, yeah, Pedri, and Dembele. And yeah, I was I'm almost debating myself here, where it kind of feels like an excuse to be like, oh, well, if those players played, because in theory, this is in theory, if Barca had a system, like, or a game plan every time, players are supposed to be plug and play. But I think if we're going off that idealistic notion that Barca have this like devout system, that it shouldn't matter if Pedri's out or Dembele's out, then you're fine. And you know what I mean? You just keep doing
next man up kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. But the problem is that Barca doesn't have that. They don't have that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so without Pedri to do the job he does, without Araujo to do the job he does, I mean, and the thing about Dest and the miss, to go back to it, it's not a defensive Dest that should have made it. Mm-hmm. But once more, that is a 20-year-old right back, or, you know, he was a winger at youth division, sure, but like, it's a right back who's being put in a position to score that goal as a right winger. And it's a reminder that if Dembele's contract situation, that winds up being with the renewals of Pedri and Ansu, you know, that's the next, they'll say next man up, but that's the next problem up, right? That's the next thing on the docket, that Dembele either has to be sold in January, or he's gone for a free, and Barca cannot afford to lose Dembele on a free. So now a very difficult decision is going to need to be made when he hasn't played in months and months and months, and also really hasn't played for 5 years, right? Like, or 4 years.
Yeah.
At this point. So the Dest miss, like, I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that good on him to put himself in the positions to be in those spots. And I think Dest is going to continue to grow and learn. And as I said, the same with Eric Garcia. Eric Garcia made two terrible mistakes. And the first one came by not tracking Alaba on the first goal. Mm-hmm. And the second one was that he got Lucas Vazquez go goal side on him. And so those are mistakes that I hope that he individually learns from. I want to talk about the second goal, though, too, because it seemed to be, I read Sid Lowe's, I always try not to do this before the podcast, but I couldn't help myself. Sid Lowe, El Clasico, you got to do the reading. So yeah, I already read the Guardian piece. And the thing that he kind of alluded to on the second goal was the image that's going to stick out from him. And that's Pique with, like, thinking he got the penalty, which we can debate on whether it's a penalty or not. Danny Carvajal certainly fouled Pique, but Coutinho was the one who went for the ball and wasn't fouled by whatever white shirt was also in there. So that's why the ref didn't call a foul, because the contact that occurred didn't affect actual, like, the placing of the ball, even though Coutinho practically ran into Pique. But the point is, like, that because Pique didn't get that call and Pique was way upfield, then Barcelona was completely exposed at the back.
They were out of position,
boom. And it was instant. So that was, like, the image that stuck out to him. But I don't actually put that even on. Yeah, Eric could have tracked, you know, should have been goal side of him. And the positioning of PK was worrisome when he pushed himself forward. Barca should have covered for that. That goes and turns into a man on the sideline. And is it fair? I mean, I'm going to let you let me do this. Is it fair to scapegoat not Luke de Jong, but the decision to put on Luke de Jong here? Because, I mean, I've already said it. Like, my issue with that was, you know, I was already, people heard in the week, I was already mad about Coutinho. He didn't make sense on the left wing. I got mad about Dinamo Kiev. I got mad at Valencia. I thought it was like bottling the left wing too much. But I actually thought the halftime substitution of Magatha out and Coutinho in to change the 4-2-3-1 was a good idea, where Modric, Cruz, and Casemiro were arguably Madrid's least impactful players, and they were leaving space in the middle of the field. And Coutinho is actually a number 10. That's where he's supposed to be at his best. So I actually thought it made a lot of sense. If Fati's going to play the nine and he's occupying that space and Memphis is comfortable on the left, then fine, put Coutinho underneath them. And I thought actually Coutinho had his best performance in a long time. But then it became Aguero. Here comes Aguero, which he doesn't look not only entirely fit, but he looks kind of old. And then I'm going to scapegoat Luke de Jong by being put on the field, because once you push Aguero and Luke de Jong and Memphis all up the field and PK comes up, yes, that leaves you exposed at the back. I would rather just move, if you're going to put PK up there anyway, make PK the forward and then put Lenglet on the gosh, like, you know what I mean? Just put Lenglet on the field. Like, don't put Luke de Jong on the field. It's not even about Luke de Jong. It's like, you have to understand the situation. It's not about feelings or anything. It's just keep a center back there and put PK up top, because he's a better finisher than Luke de Jong. Then just do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, and that makes sense. I mean, I don't know if I can say it any better. Yeah, if you want to put PK up front.
I don't need confirmation bias.
I think so. Because you don't have a decidedly better option. I mean, it's like you said, it's De Jong, it's Sergio Aguero. The fan of me is delighted to see him score for Barca, but
even Brathwaite, I felt like, where's Brathwaite? He's missed, right? Yeah. Like, what could he have added in this game? I mean, that's where we're at.
Of the three of those guys, he's the most kind of dynamic player at this point.
Yeah.
You know, he has the most athleticism.
Like, when you say it, but it is.
No, I mean, it's not. It's a low bar, but the fact is, I mean, he is the most athletic and kind of fast and quick and twitchy, dynamic player of the three of those. And yeah, I would much rather have him in there than, this trio of forwards. And then you push PK up. I mean, it's almost equal. It's not exactly, but it's almost the equivalent of kind of pulling your goalie in hockey, where you're...
Yeah, right.
Put whatever forwards you have up front. And then you're like, okay, what else can we find to throw at the attack also at the expense of...
Losing.
Coverage, like,
right? You either lose in that moment. You're right. That's perfect with the hockey goal. Yeah, you either lose in that moment, or you've tied the game up, and things have gotten interesting. Because that goal from Aguero, it was just such a consolation goal where they'd already won the El Clásico. Like, it was over. Like, all the players knew it. And then
it was in the 97th minute. you barely have time to even take a kickoff and try anything.
They really didn't. So I mean, so it laid on like. I think Koeman did things that were right and did things that were wrong. And I think one of the questions that people are fairly asking is, you know, as continues to be the question with every big game that, and when I say big game, I mean like a major team, a giant team, every giant game that comes up with every big team that has any kind of international pedigree, that's any world renowned fan, where if you go to your local, you know, your local match, or like, you know what I mean? Local like tournament in the area, somebody's going to be wearing a jersey with that kind of team. Like any branded club like that, every time Barca faces one of those teams, Koeman just doesn't seem to be able to get this team over the edge. And and I think the through line that keeps coming up, that is a question. It's not even about Koeman out or whatever. It's because Barca's issues are so structural that in the case of Koeman, I think it's that Koeman's clearly in this game, as I said, I thought to start the game with the lineup and everything, he had the right idea and the right game plan. And if Dest puts that's in, then we're talking about a different story. So I think Koeman actually got it right to start. And then the decision to put in Coutinho and change the formation wasn't a bad idea. I think it was a good risk and a good chance. And it made sense. Barca was still the better team in the second half. And then, of course, that second goal goes in because of, I think, what was a very grave mistake from Koeman. Yeah. But Barca also weren't executing. So it's right. It's things can be, and people who've been listening to this for a long time know Total Soccer Show in the US, Daryl Grove passed away a year from today. It's one of the reasons I still podcast. You know, he was an inspiration for me as a podcast. And he always said things can be two things. So is Koeman a manager that can take Barcelona to that next level? Does he have the right game plan? And two, if he even does have the great game plan, are his players executing? So, Emil, I mean, it's an impossible question to answer, but which one was it more of? Was it that Koeman was outplanned again by Carlo Ancelotti, who won his first El Clasico? Or is it that the players just didn't really execute whatever game plan Koeman put forward?
I mean, I think in general, I think Koeman's been out game planned in big games against, like you said, against the big brand name teams.
Yeah. And Granada. I want to throw that in there too.
And Granada.
And the Giants of Andalusia in Granada.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly. I mean, I think by and large, I think he's been out game planned in, I mean, we can say with a few exceptions, you know, with very few exceptions, the most vital games of his Barca tenure, I think Koeman has been out game planned. I don't think that was the case today. Not necessarily. I mean, like you said, he got the starting lineup right. The first, what I mean, I guess we can say, I don't even know. I mean, I'm going to say 15 minutes, and I don't know exactly kind of where that demarcation is. But for the first 15 minutes, they looked good. They didn't look, you know, they looked solid and steady, and they looked like they knew the plan that they were trying to execute. They seemed fairly authoritative in trying to execute that plan, you know. And on the one hand, the miss by Dest, like you said, it's a right back who's rightfully, you know, well done to him, has put himself in a position to do that. And, you know, he's not an attacker by trade and all of that. Like that miss was kind of crippling, because if that goes in, like, yeah, if he puts that in the back of the net, look, there's every possibility that Madrid just come back and beg Barca back.
I think that's almost why I jump into it. It's like, why is it? Like, why is a miss like that in the, what was it, the 33rd minute? Why is that the backbreaker? Why did Barcelona lose a match when it was 0-0 at that moment?
Well, because I think it's kind of, look, it stinks, but I think it's kind of where this team is right now, where, you know, maybe I'm forgetting one, but I can't remember the last kind of shockwave kind of joy runs through, you know, kind of the explosive kind of jubilant goal. And not only that, it seems like so often when the other side scored first,
yeah,
there is not only a sense of not rallying the troops, there does seem to be a sense of, uh-oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, with the team.
Well, so like, I think the last two goals I could think of, well, obviously the Ansu one against Levante, but that was, yeah, about Ansu more than it was about FC Barcelona and the, yeah, result and what that meant.
Yeah, because it was putting the finishing touch on a 3-0 win.
Right. And then the, yeah, one before that, it was the Granada comeback, which is that mean, yeah, which is a team that dug themselves a hole, even though, right, they had Messi, they dug themselves a, yeah, hole. And that jubilance was because they dug themselves out of that hole. But right, you're, yeah, right. Other than those two instances over the last 2 years, even under Koeman's whole tenure, it's difficult to think because of all the big game moments, if you will.
Yeah.
Because now we're going to the goal by Antoine Griezmann, I think it was, against Real Sociedad last year, when, right, it felt like a must-win game in December, and they wind up getting, mm-hmm, getting the result because of Antoine Griezmann. And like, that's, yeah, like one of the last ones I could think of. Yeah.
And I think what kind of compounds it a little bit too is, you know, I mean, there have been times where excellent to great Barca teams of the past have had matches or stretches of even, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 matches where they're constantly attacking. They're constantly just kind of pelting the goalkeeper and, you know, kind of just putting shots in. And, you know, sometimes it just feels like the goal is latched shut, but you at least have this sense that there's wave after wave of attack coming and we're pounding on the door. Like, that's not happening in these games either. And so I think that's kind of the problem, is these kinds of absolutely golden opportunities aren't as plentiful as we want them to be, as they've often been in the past. So I do think when you get one that is just so perfect and it misses, like that one, in addition to kind of just the natural frustration that comes with missing that shot, I feel like there's almost a compounding effect of, God, when are we going to get another opportunity this spectacularly great again?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it goes back to the disorganized and the disjointed, that while the attack for Barca was better, they just, again, they didn't even have much more possession in the game, but yet they were doing more with their possession until the counterattack goal, and then the second counterattack goal as well. And it was, you know, I got the sense that when you watch a team like that, it feels like something is funky. It feels like something is off. And it reminds me of the Rijkaard team from like 2006, like right before like the turnover, right? And right before everything, yeah, kind of changed. And it felt like not that the veterans, unlike then when like Ronaldinho and Deco just seem like they're going through the motions, it doesn't feel like Busquets and PK and Alba are going through the motions. Certainly not. I mean, again, they were the PK and Alba were great against Dinamo Kiev, and PK even in this game was good. I mean, he wasn't terrible. I mean, they kept Benzema in check largely. He was working with Eric Garcia, a very young defender, and they were kind of figuring out problem solving, and Alba the same way was kind of problem solving. But there definitely just feels like the difference between then and now is that that team felt funky, right? You're like, you're looking around, you say the names out loud and you look at the squad and you go, okay, I mean, how is the squad not getting results? And then with this team, I understand they're in transition. The big difference is though, that team had vets to be pushed out or you know, or players to be transferred out. And the next generation was already ready. Like they were already being christened.
That was the thing. And like, they were so ready.
Right. And Messi was on the young run, but he was also the best 19-year-old we've ever seen at that point.
Yeah. It was like it was the greatest 19-year-old that's kind of probably ever been. He won
the
Ballon d'Or
the next year. So it's not like he wasn't ready for that moment. But for this unit with Barca, it feels like those veterans are funky. They're in the same spot, but these veterans are not as apoplectic as those were, but these youngsters are not as ready for that challenge as these are, because these youngsters are four or five years younger than that generation was ready to go. And even that generation, remember that Dani Alves wasn't even a part of that yet. We remember him as like part of that mythos, but no, Dani Alves showed up from Sevilla with a team ready to go.
809,
Right, exactly. So if there's Dani Alves, not actual Dani Alves, who's trying to get back into Barca apparently, but if there is the version of Dani Alves that can be found at somewhere in around the Liga for 15 million euros, and that's where Barcelona needs their money instead of Dani Olmo, then I would love to see a Dani Alves, right? Like the final
like Redux, exactly. Right,
the final piece of the puzzle. That would be great. But I don't know if that's going to come, because I don't think that younger generation is just yet ready, but that the veteran group is already a negative 1 years to being apoplectic enough to be forced to the curb. And so this again is another reminder that this squad is not ready for this moment, and we're expecting them to be in this moment and win in this game, even though they deserve to, is still, it's still a little naive from us, from how I feel.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, and what's frustrating about it is, like you're saying, in many ways, the showing that they put forth would have won other games against this same Real Madrid team. Like if you play this game 10 times, 20 times, 100 times, like it's not one of those situations where you're like, oh my God, Madrid win 95 or 100 of those games. Like, absolutely not. Like this performance is good enough to win on another day. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what's a little bit frustrating about it. But what you're saying is exactly right. And going back to the veterans, I think while there are young talents who are on the come, and they are admittedly very young, there's the midfield looks, fortunately, kind of rich for the time going forward. You know, between Gabi and Pedri and De Jong and, you know, like, so there is kind of a wealth of assets in the midfield. And obviously there's Ansu Fati in attack, who's spectacular. But in defense, where we have two of the kind of the aging old guard in Pique and Alba, there are a lot of young defenders being, I guess, kind of blended in or sort of trialed, and sort of we're trying to figure out where they are. No one has definitively established himself to almost push out the old guard. To be like, no, I might be young, but I'm too good to
I think Araujo.
He's the exception. Yeah.
And then I think Pedri, I mean, Gabi, we can still debate that, but then the midfield, Pedri's the one to.
Well, I think like Pedri and Gabi have kind of done it. That's what I mean. And as far as the midfield, I don't harbor a lot of concern about the midfield, strangely, but I think
Busquets also played 90 minutes, three games in a row. So my concern is not from our perspective, if we were making decisions, but from where the team currently is, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, in that sense, I agree.
Okay. So, you knew you were going to hear from Francesc Tomàs. I think everyone knows that if you read the show notes or whatever. But Emil, before we go, at least you and I go, I just want to give you the last word on 2-1, putting another El Clasico in the books, number 256. We weren't alive for all of them, but thankfully there will be more of them, including one in the spring. So if Barca, you know, are a different team then and take 3 points at the Santiago Bernabeu, this one will be largely forgotten. Let's put it that way. Yep. So I'll give you the last word on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was... Going into the game, I didn't know what I was exactly going to expect. I mean, I was really hoping that we didn't get one of these disastrous kind of a la Champions League against Bayern and Benfica type showings where it kind of got out of hand and it never felt like there was a chance. So in a lot of those ways, it was very encouraging. I mean, Barca went toe to toe with a good team, one of the two, three best teams in La Liga, and they battled. They went toe to toe and they weren't overwhelmed. I didn't feel like there was any point where they were kind of helpless or flailing or anything like that. It came down to the fine margins. It was one team took a couple of chances, one team made a couple of mistakes, and the other one took advantage of those. And that's what these games are supposed to be like.
It's going to be the margins. Agreed.
Yeah, it stinks to lose it, but it was. I mean, it wasn't the most kind of eye popping or kind of. It wasn't necessarily the most mesmerizing Clásico I've ever seen, but it was a good game. Both teams played reasonably well or kind of to each other's level, and one made a couple of mistakes and one seized upon those mistakes and their chances. And Unfortunately, it wasn't Barca that did the good stuff there.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, it's a team called Real Madrid.
Exactly.
Who they all feel a certain way about. Well, anyway, so I know everyone's bummed and everyone's sad. We're bummed too. But I'm going to do the exit, the outro right now. Again, Twitter and Instagram, at the Barcelona Pod. Follow him, Emil Evanesian. He also writes some really good basketball stuff. I always forget to say this, but I'm trying to distract people now. You have other writings too. I always want to remind people. So that's Emil and Evan. I'm at W13 on Twitter, at the Barcelona Pod for everything else. Our closed Facebook group, I know people are disappointed over there. Give us a few days, I think, over there until the feelings get out, and then answer those questions, and I'll let you into the Facebook group, the Barcelona Pod. Podcast. And then Patreon is how we keep making these shows. Thanks so much to everybody over there for a little incentive to support the show, as well as that you get these shows without the ads. And then we are on YouTube. I did my dream teams that I also released here on the podcast feed. So I tried to distract everybody from the malaise that was coming today, that I kind of felt like the train was coming to hit us. So I did put that up, and that's all about the future and all about the story of how each individual player got to the academy. So if you haven't heard on the feed, or if you haven't watched it on YouTube, you can check it out at the Barcelona Podcast. But I would say, most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the show, but we're not done yet. I'm actually going to let your old friend and mine, Frances Tomás, hear us out. So, Frances, go ahead.
Hola, culés. Buenas noches. Buenos días. Buenas tardes. Hello, good morning, and all that, wherever you are in the world. Long time no see, even though clearly you cannot see me. But now, I'm really, really pleased to be back in the podcast. I'm doing well. And I'm very happy that Dan and all the different guests continue to take the podcast forward. And thank you to everyone who's still listening to the podcast. And if you've never heard me before, that means you're new. Welcome to the podcast. It's Frances here. Just to say that I've watched the Clásico. Dan asked me to send a little voice note about it. Basically, it's not great. You know, the season is not fantastic by any way, shape, or form. In fact, Barca have been quite poor throughout. The departure of Messi clearly was always going to leave a void, and we knew it was going to be difficult. We knew it was going to be tricky. And to be honest, the fact that we've got Pedri, even though that he's injured now, and Gavi and Ansu and, you know, et cetera, all the youngsters, Nico, Eric Garcia, coming through and establishing themselves, Sergiño Dest, it's a positive, and we just have to take it for what it is. The Clásico, obviously, we lost. Losing a Clásico hurts. I'm nearly 40 years old now, and you know, it always hurt from the very first day that I watched Barca, and it still hurts today to lose a Clásico. But having said that, in the context of the season, I think it is quite clear that Barca are not at the level that we need to be at to compete in Europe. There are major teams around the continent that are better than us right now. Let's face it. Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid right now, I think, are also better than us in terms of they've got more oficio, which is they got more know-how. They are able to dominate the areas. In El Clásico, you could clearly see that Madrid put away the chances they had and Barca did not. And ultimately, that made all the difference. I think that there is far too much inexperience in the Barca team to be able to win these sort of games, to be honest. We can't complain about the referee until the clouds come down. You know, we could be doing that for the next 27 hours. But ultimately, it is what it is. If Barca need to rely on a referee signaling a penalty or, you know, giving something our way, then it's a sign that Barca is not working well. He's not going the right way. Obviously, if Serginho Dest puts his chance away, then it would have been a different game. If the referee gives the, for me, quite clear penalty on Piqué at the end, it's a different game. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. It's not the end of the world. It is in the context of the season. It is a league game that we could have lost, and we did. I think that there are several players in the Barca team that need to step up. I think one of the clearer ones for me, Memphis Depay, and also Frenkie de Jong. I think that they are below standard at the moment. I think that Piqué, Busquets, and Alba are actually performing fairly well this season, and in El Clásico they were decent. Serginho Dest obviously didn't put the chance away, but I think the rest of the game he was all right. And then, you know, Ansu Fati trying to make a difference, but obviously he's far from his ideal form. He's still injured, not injured, but, you know, recovering from injury. I think El Kun Agüero can help us, but again, he's not there just yet in terms of optical form. I think that Luke de Jong should never really have come to Barca, to be honest. He's not a striker that imposes any sort of respect by any rival defenses. I think that it was obviously it's quite clear he doesn't have the level to play at Barca. I think when Dembélé comes back, in terms of being able to be more poignant and being able to be running at defenders, being able to create something different, I think Dembélé is needed. Pedri not playing, I think that you know, playing every single game for Spain this summer obviously didn't help his health moving forward. I think he played over 72-73 games last year, which is absurd. And even though that he's very young, that was always going to be a factor. You can only see what's happening to Dani Olmo, who's also missing a lot of games through injury, and they play the same amount of games, roughly. So, yeah, I mean, El Clásico, it is annoying that we lost. It is disheartening that Barca are not able to compete at the highest level anymore. But at the same time, as I said at the beginning, I think there are a lot of things that Koeman are putting in place. Not necessarily because of his tactics, not necessarily because of being inventious, but I think that his biggest legacy once he leaves is that he would have given so many youngsters the chance to step up and hopefully prove their worth. I've got high hopes for Nico. I've got high hopes for Alejandro Valde as well. I hope that they both you know, get more minutes and start coming into the rotation. I'm not even going to mention Ricky Puig. He's clearly not in the picture at all, and there must be a reason for it. Not just Koeman doesn't like me, but there's got to be something else, because otherwise it's quite strange. But yeah, I think I'm going to leave it there. Loads of positives from the youngsters, but ultimately Barca are not at the level, and the gap that Messi left, it's irreplaceable. But the thing is, you know, it would be great if the collective of players that have been left behind actually stepped up to fill Messi's void. And as things stand today, I just don't think that that's happening as well as it should. All right. It was going to be a 2-minute message. I don't know how long this is. Whoa, 6 minutes. All right. I'm going to stop talking. Forza Barça. Have a great season. Thank you, Dan, and all the different guests that are coming to the podcast. Have a great, great day. Forza.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.